just to, rather than reading the whole first 37 chapters, we'll just do a quick summary as to what's happened to Job. We know that from chapter 1, there's this drama between God and Satan over Job. Satan felt that Job was having integrity and faith because God was prospering him, protecting him, and watching over him. And that if God removed that protection, removed what he had, his possessions, and his health, and so on, that he would curse God. And even his wife tried to encourage him to curse God. But we see that something that's hard to understand, why God would allow this to happen, and this is one of the big questions in this book, because sometimes things happen in our lives and we just don't understand why. I remember many years ago in Zambia, we had a very serious crisis in the assembly that I was associated with, a group of men who many I believe were not even true believers, came in and took over the whole assembly by force, throwing the elders out physically, as it were. And I wonder, why would God allow that? Now, things have rectified since then, but nevertheless, it was a very difficult time why this would happen. Yet God's sovereignty and God's rule was still there. Well, we see, as you can see up on the screen there, that Job lost a lot. He had many losses. His agricultural losses, he lost 7,000 sheep, 3,000 yoke of oxen, that's 6,000, right? 500 female donkeys and a large number of servants, either stolen away or killed, destroyed. But worse still, on the same day as he lost all the other animals and servants, he lost all his family, all his children, 7 sons and 3 daughters, all in one day. Now, I've been to funerals in Zambia where there's been 2 people die, and that's a very tragic situation. There's a lot of wailing over there, of course, and people falling on the ground screaming and so on. That kind of thing is kind of hard to take sometimes. But that's what happened. And then, of course, chapter 2, we come to his health, and he got these boils from his foot to his head, or head to his foot, and they weren't just small boils. And this is a list I got from MacArthur, and these are some of the effects. They were painful. There was severe itching. It caused great grief. He lost his appetite. There was agonizing discomfort. There was insomnia. Some of us had that without boils, but he had that very much. It was worm and infested flesh in those boils. That's not very nice to think about. Continued oozing of the boils. There was hallucinations. There was decaying skin. He was shriveled up in his skin. He had severe halitosis. Hope you know what that is. Bad breath, right? And his teeth fell out. Relentless pain. Skin turning black. Raging fever. And dramatic weight loss. Now, any one of those would be bad enough. But altogether, I mean, that's just devastating. I mean, we complain about a toothache or maybe one boil, but he had much more than that. And with all that, no wonder he wanted to curse the day of his birth. He just didn't know why God even allowed him to be born. And then, of course, his 3 friends came to comfort him. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They came to comfort, but what did? They discouraged him. They accused him falsely. They almost destroyed his hope. And there was another young man, Elihu, but he wasn't much better. He criticized the other 3 men, but he didn't really help Job any more than they did. So that was Job's situation. Tragic, something which even his friends couldn't understand. They didn't know what had happened. That's why they accused him falsely. And even when they came, remember how many days they sat saying nothing. 7 whole days. That's a long time to sit in silence. So he was in a very, very difficult situation. And I don't know about you, but I would be devastated if I went through that. I remember many years ago when my wife fell. She went down to the river to check on a canoe, and she slipped in some mud and landed on right on her seat and did damage to her coccyx, and her feet began to be paralyzed. And she thought, I'm going to be a cripple. And she was really worried and crying out. And we took 30 hours to get from the northwest province of Zambia to Toronto, Mississauga Hospital. 30 hours later, she's on a bed in the hospital. That was the Lord's goodness. Now, fortunately, she didn't break her back, but she did some damage and some bleeding, and that's what was causing the temporary paralysis. But that's just a small thing compared to what Job had. Well, Job, of course, was, in a sense, complaining and calling God to justify why he was doing this. He was really complaining to God, in a sense. You can understand why he might be led to do that. But we're going to look at how God answers Job. He doesn't answer him by giving him an answer, you're suffering because of this and this and this. No. But instead, he's going to talk about his creation, his handiwork. And from that, Job is going to get the answer to his dilemma. He's going to get something to satisfy him and to put him in his right state of mind. Now let's look at chapter 38. And we're just going to start at the first part here. Chapter 38, verse 1. This is where God begins to question Job. Verse 1, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man, and I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurement? Surely you know. Or who stretched out the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? And who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. So the first thing we see here is that God is bringing Job into a court, as it were, and he's firing questions at Job, all to do with his creative handiwork. Okay, Job, are you there? Could you do that? Can you do this? Can you do that? Can you make this kind of creature and so on? Can you put the earth where it's supposed to be? Now, Job knows that God had hung the earth on nothing. He knew that much. He quotes that earlier. But nevertheless, he couldn't really cope with what God was saying here. It was beyond him. Job had already mentioned that God had stretched out the sky and hung the world on nothing, but God had further questions for him regarding the earth, the size, and how it was put into space. Think about the size of the earth. The radius is 6,378 kilometers. The diameter, 12,742. The volume was 1,083.15 times 10 to the 9 kilometers cubed. That's nine zeros after that, eh? And the circumference, 40,074.46 kilometers at the equator. It's a bit different other parts, but at the equator, that's what it is. So the Earth is not a small little ball. It's a huge thing. It's very, very big. There's a picture of it seen from the astronauts. And so Job was questioned about the earth. Did you put it there? Did you lay its foundation? Did you put it up there? And did you put it in its place? But of course, he really couldn't answer that. Well, the next thing he's going to show Job is ignorance of God's knowledge and power to control the floodwaters and form the oceans and keep them together. Notice what it says there in verse 8. And who shut the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick clouds its swaddling band? When I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors? When I said, this far you may come and no further? And here your proud waves must stop. And so this is God controlling all the water, the flood waters, and forming the oceans and keeping them where they belong. Now you think about, a small amount of water we can control, but a big amount, that's different. I remember years ago I was helping, some men wanted to put in a hydro scheme near where we lived in Zambia, and we went to this rapids near a sort of a falls, And I had a small instrument about that long and a little cup about that big on the end of it, and I had to put it into the water and hold it to measure the speed. I tell you, I could hardly hold on to it. I had to use both hands like this, holding it. It just was going so fast. But think of God controlling all the water. I mean, in the oceans, the volume is 1.332 billion cube kilometers. That's a lot of water. And God controlled all that. The average depth is something around 3,682.2 meters. That's very deep. It's a lot of water. There's the oceans and the earth, around the earth, and God controlled all that water. It's a lot of water control, all by his power, by his strength, by his wisdom. And there's the Pacific, the biggest of the oceans. And those of us who have flown over that, my wife being from New Zealand, we went across that ocean a couple of times, traveling to New Zealand. 13, 14-hour journey. It's a big body of water. Well, then God comes to something else. He says, he's showing Job his ignorance of God's knowledge and power to control light and dark and day and night. Notice in verse 12, he says, "Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and that the wicked be shaken out of it? It takes on the form like clay under a seal and stands out like a garment. From the wicked their light is withheld, and the upraised arm is broken." And so we see here then that Job is being asked about light and dark and night and day. It's something which God is questioning him about. It's something which he just couldn't answer. The controlling the light, making the sun come up in the earth, that would involve, of course, the earth's rotation and so on, and darkness and so on. And it was something which Job just couldn't answer. He just couldn't answer what God was doing. God is showing him how he has made everything, how he is controlling everything, and that everything is in his control. And Job really has nothing to say at this point. Well, then the next thing that comes up, and there is, by the way, a bit of light that's taken in Zambia on the Zambezi River, just above the falls. And a couple of years ago, I was out there with my daughter saying goodbye to my friends out there and had that picture on the Zambezi River. All you have to do there is watch out for the crocodiles and the hippos. Then verse 16 to 18, we have God showing Job his ignorance of his knowledge, God's knowledge and power to explore the depth of the seas and the expanse of the earth. Notice what he says in verse 16 there. He says, have you entered the springs of the sea, or have you walked in search of its depths? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the breadth of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. Well, the Pacific Ocean, I mentioned, is quite big. It's 166 million kilometers, or million kilometers squared. All the oceans together, 361.1 million square kilometers. The average depth is 3940 meters, but there are some places where it's much deeper. There's one place, the Mariana Trench. It's 10,924 meters down. There it is, right in that part of the Pacific Ocean, over towards Japan and just north of Papua New Guinea there. It's very deep. But the Mariana Trench is deeper in terms of going down than the Mount Everest is going up. Mount Everest is about 8,848 meters above sea level. But the Mariana Trench, you can see from that, it is 11,035 meters below sea level. That's very deep. And so God is saying, Job, have you measured the depth of the sea? Of course, he had never been down the trench. Now, today people have gone down there with special submarines and special machines to measure that, but Job had no idea. He didn't understand the expanse of the earth and the expanse of the sea. Well, then he comes to another thing that God has made, and God is showing Job his ignorance of God's knowledge and power to control the elements, the weather. And we think about this different thing with the weather. You know, when it comes to snow, and you have plenty of that here in New Zealand, sorry, Prince Edward Island, that's my wife's influence. Prince Edward Island has their share of snow, but not one snowflake is the same. Not one. Every one is different. That's amazing. All part of God's grand design. And of course, when it comes to hail, in case you're wondering, hail forms when a thunderstorm updrafts are strong enough to carry water droplets well above the freezing level. This freezing process forms a hailstone, which can grow as additional water freezes onto it. Eventually, the hailstone becomes too heavy for the updrafts to support it, and it falls to the ground. One of the heaviest ones recorded was in Bangladesh, 1.02 kilograms. Wouldn't want that to land on you, or a vehicle. Years ago in Calgary, in Alberta, we had a rental van, and we were in a hailstorm. We almost thought we were going to lose the van. The largest recorded one that I read about was 20 centimeters. That's pretty big. South Dakota in 2010. Maybe there's more since then. There's an idea of how big they can get. And the amazing thing, notice in verse 30 what it says there. In verse 30, it says, the waters hardened like stone, and the surface of the deep is frozen. So once again, there's God's knowledge and God's power and wisdom to make water freeze on the surface, not on the bottom of the lake. Because you know what would happen to all the fish. If it froze from the bottom up or from the top right down, you'd have no fish left here on the island. No, the water freezes on top. You can do some ice fishing, but it doesn't freeze all the way down. That's all part of God's grand design. And God is showing this to Job, and Job so far has nothing much to say. And then he's going to show Job his ignorance of God's knowledge and power to control the laws of the universe and govern the stars and the planets, clouds and the lightning and the rain. He's bringing in the elements again. Verse 31 to 38, notice what it says there, 31. Can you bind the cluster of Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion? Can you bring out the Mazaroth in the season? Or can you guide the great bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominions over the earth? So here we see God has stretched out the heavens and he's put them in a certain design. And he's talking about the constellations here. And you can go out at night and see these particular figures in the sky. They're always there. They're always the same. And God has done that with his great design and wisdom and power. And of course, the star maps used to be used by the sailors to find out where they were and to know which way to go. So great discovery there in the stars. And of course, you think about the stars, there are so many of them. There's a picture of the sky at night, and there are thousands and thousands, in fact, millions of stars. And there's the lightning coming down. But you think about it, there's so many stars out there. And it's something which is quite amazing. In fact, there are the nearest star is the sun, and that is about 150 million kilometers away. There are others that are 40 million million kilometers away. And you'd have to use a measurement called a light year to find how far that is. A light year is 9,460 million kilometers. So that's sort of a measuring stick you use to measure distance because it's so far. The smallest diameter is about 1,392,000 kilometers, but there are some bigger ones, 330 times bigger than the sun. That's just a little bit about the stars. So here's God showing Job about God's knowledge and his power to how to control the laws of the universe and govern the stars and the planets. And here God stretched all these out and he put them in place, and they're there every night when you look up. Tremendous power and wisdom involved there. And then Job begins to talk to, or rather God begins to talk to Job about his ignorance of God's knowledge and power to create and provide for the animals and the birds. And of course the first one is my friend the Ndumba, that's a lion, I'm just quoting from my local language there, but God is saying to Job, can you look after feeding the lion? Notice down there in verse 39 of chapter 38, he says, can you hunt for prey for the lion and satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens and lurk in their lairs to lie in wait? And then, who provides food for the raven when its young ones cry to God and wanders about for lack of food? So here we have God asking Job about who's going to look after these animals. I made these, I look after them, I provide for their food. Job, is that what you do? And Job, once again, has little or nothing to say. There's the raven, and God provides for that too. Remember, the Lord Jesus talked about the sparrows, even they're so small, and he provides food for them. So he says that God does that, why should you worry, right? But here he's talking about bigger birds like the raven, and God provides for them as well. God makes them, he provides for them, and he looks after them. And then the goats, this particular goat was probably a Nubian ibex, and that was there, and that he mentions that in verse chapter 39, verse 1. Do you know the time when the wild mountain goats bear young? Can you mark when the deer gives birth? Can you number the months that they fulfill? Do you know the time of their when they bear young? And so on. So there he's asking about the goat, and then the deer, which is more common in Ontario, where I've lived a bit. And he's asking, do you know when they give birth, and so on. Now today, many scientists, many people working with these would have more idea, but Job didn't know. He couldn't answer those questions. So God has made all these different animals. He knows all about them. He looks after them and provides for them. And then the next one is the wild donkey, sometimes called the onager. And for that one, he says, verse 5 of chapter 39, who set the wild donkey free? Who loosed the bonds of the onager? Whose home have I made the wilderness and the barren lands his dwelling? He scorns the tumult of the city and does not heed the shouts of the driver, and so on. So here this animal's out in the wilds, as it were. He wasn't in the cities. He was free in that sense. He says, who made him that way? Who put him out there? He's not in the city. He's not a city creature. He's out in the wilderness. And Job, did you put him out there? Is that your work? So he's just throwing all these questions to Job all the time. And Job, of course, has no real answer. And then the wild ox reminds me of the wildebeest. Out in Zambia one time, we were going through a game park, and we got ourselves sort of trapped in the middle of a big herd of Cape buffalo. And you don't want to be like that. And I wonder what the driver would do, but he blew his horn and banged the side of the door with his hand, and these creatures suddenly moved out of the way, and I was very glad to see that. I tried it another time when I was facing an elephant and managed to escape that too, so the Lord was good. But these guys were rather hard to control. Notice what it says there in verse number 9, will a wild ox be willing to serve you? Will he bed by your manger? Can you bind the wild ox in the furrow with ropes? Or will he plow the valleys behind you? Will you trust him because of his strength is great? Or will he leave you your labor to him? This animal was not one to be tamed, it seems. It was a wild ox, one which he didn't want to get too close to. Now, God is saying, Job, I made this. I know how to control. I know what it's like. I made him like he is. Do you know about that? Can you control him like I can? And then the ostrich. And here God talks about the ostrich. And interesting what he says. Verse 13, he says, the wings of the ostrich wave proudly, but are her wings and pinions like kindly storks? For she leaves her eggs on the ground and warms them in the dust. She forgets that a foot may crush them or that the wild beast may break them. She treats her young harshly as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without concern, because God deprived her of wisdom and did not endow her with understanding. When she lifts herself on high, she scorns the horse and its rider. Now here, Job is being questioned about the ostrich. He says, can you make a stupid animal like this, Job? doesn't look after its own eggs. He sits on other eggs instead sometimes. Sometimes he will even crush his own eggs. But when he runs, he's faster than a horse. In fact, he can run about 40 kilometers faster than a horse can. But he hasn't got much wisdom. He said, Job, can you make an animal like that? I can almost see God laughing, but I know God doesn't laugh, not in that sense. But Job, once again, has nothing to say. God is just demonstrating his creative handiwork. And then, of course, the horse. And he talks about the horse there in these verses. He says in verse number 19, have you given the horse its strength? Have you clothed his neck with thunder? Can you frighten him like a locust? His majesty snorting strikes terror. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He gallops into the clash of arms. He mocks at fear and is not frightened, nor does he turn back from the sword. And so on. Here, God is saying, here's a horse that I've made. And he's not afraid to run into battle, even though there's javelins coming and spears and arrows coming. He just charges right in, and his feet are pawing at the ground to get going. Is Job, can you make an animal like that, Job? Can you make a horse like that? Give him that courage to charge into battle? Come on, Job. You can see what's happening here, eh? God is really showing his tremendous handiwork. And then the hawk. That's the next one he mentions. Verse 26, does the hawk fly by your wisdom and spread its wings toward the south? Does the eagle mount up at your command and make his nest on high? There's the eagle. He says, can you make a creature like this to fly high? And the eagle, he talks about the eagle. Notice what he says there. Verse 28, on the rock it dwells and resides. In the crag of the rock he's his stronghold. From there he spies out the prey. His eyes observe from afar. These creatures have tremendous eyesight, better than ours. And from way up on the cliffs, he can see way down to a creature and then dive down to grab it. And God's saying to Job, can you make an animal like that? Can you make a bird like that? And then the final two are the most interesting. God is showing Job's ignorance of God's knowledge and power to create and control giant and ferocious animals. But before we get there, notice Job's reaction so far. At the end of chapter 39, look at chapter 40, verse 1. It says, moreover, the Lord answered Job, shall one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I have spoken, I will not answer, but twice I will proceed no further. So here Job is saying, okay, I spoke once, but I was out of order there. I didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't understand. I was speaking in ignorance, without knowledge. My hands and my mouth. I'm not going to say another thing. He shut himself up, as it were. Well, God's not finished yet, because he has two more creatures he wants to describe to Job. And Job knew about these very interesting creatures. And verse 6, then God answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you. You shall answer me. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Have you an arm like God? Can you thunder with a voice like his? Then adorn yourself with majesty and splendor, and array yourself with glory and beauty. Disperse the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. Hide these in the dust together. Bind their faces in hidden darkness. Then I will confess to you that your right hand can save you. So here God is challenging Job. You've spoken against me. You've contended against me, trying to annul my judgment. You're condemning me. Now, if you can do what I do, if you can control people, if you can control the wicked, if you can control those who are proud and deal with them, then I'll know that you're like me. But of course, Job couldn't. Well, now we come to the second last of the creatures. Verse 15, he says, now behold, Behemoth, which I made along with you. So this creature was something that was made at the same time as Job. And it says, he eats grass like an ox. See now, his strength is in his hips and the power of his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs are like bars of iron. He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who makes him can bring near his sword. So in other words, here God is describing this creature, and he's saying he's like this, his bones are like this, his legs are like this, and so on, and he has a tail like a cedar. I'll come back to that in a minute. He says, and the only one that can get near to him is me, the maker. Not you, Job, only me. And then he says, surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees, the cover of the reeds and marsh. The lotus trees cover him with their shade, the willows by the brook around him. Indeed, the river may rage, but he is not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth, though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare. So this animal is so strong that he can stand in the Jordan River at flood time and not be moved. Remember that thing I talked about trying to measure the flow of water? Just a small little thing like this. This creature can stand in the Jordan River, and the water is coming at him, and he can just stand there. He doesn't move. Now, some people think that this creature is a hippo. And others think maybe an elephant. But personally, I think it was more like that. This it says back in that verse we read, that in verse 17, that he has a tail like a cedar. Now, a cedar is a big tree. And you look at the tail of a hippo, doesn't look like a cedar at all. Even moving it doesn't move like a cedar. And as for an elephant, same thing. Its tail moves around, but it doesn't move like a cedar, and it's not longer like a cedar. So I think this creature here is more like it. There's a dinosaur that was called a Diplodocus, and this animal was quite big. In fact, I think I have something down here. Yeah, here it is. A hippo is 2,626 kilograms with a short tail. But this other one, called a Diplodocus, meaning double beam, long tail, long neck, and so on, 127 meters long, 27 metric tons, and he has a tail like a cedar. And he says, look now at Behemoth, which I made along with you. In other words, Job had seen this. He knew what God was talking about. Some people say that these creatures, this one and the one next one called Leviathan, are some kind of mythological creatures. Well, I have a problem with that, because all along God's talking about real things. Lions, goats, deer, birds, ostriches, they're all real. Why would he suddenly switch to myths? And besides, why would God ever use a myth to describe his power? That doesn't make sense. That was totally against God's character. So I don't believe this is a myth. I think this is a real animal that brought fear and that only God could approach. Now, the last one is the most fierce. His name was Leviathan. Let's just look at what it says here in the next part here, chapter 41, verse 1. Can you draw, and by the way, the answer to each question here is no, no, no. Can you, and I want you to say no after I ask each question, okay? Can you draw Leviathan with a hook? Can you snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose? Pierce his jaw with a hook? Will you make supplications to you? Will he speak softly to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as a servant? Will you play with him as with a bird? Will you lease him for your maidens? Will your companions make a banquet of him? Will you apportion him with merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Everything's no. He couldn't do any of those. Quite a creature. Notice what it says in verse 8. Lay your hand upon him. Remember the battle. Never do it again. We say once bitten, twice shy. Eh? You wouldn't touch this guy a second time if you survived. In fact, the next verse says, indeed, verse 9, indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one